जयो राधमाधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी किशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंगना किशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंगना यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी जयो राधमाधव कुंज बिहारी जयो राधमाधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी किशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंगना किशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंगना यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी जयो राधमाधव कुंज बिहारी जयो राधमाधव कुंज बिहारी जय ओम विष्णु भाग परमहंस परिव्राज काचार्य स्तोत्र सुत्र श्री श्रीमद सुवाई भक्ति वैरांत स्वामी प्रभुपार की जय श्री प्रभुपार की जय नितय गौर भयमानंदे हरि हरि बोल समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय आदृष्टिय समुद्रवृति आदृष्टिय समुद्रवृति आदृष्टिय समुद्रवृति आदृष्टि श्री श्री गुरु गौरांग I was thinking one of the things I think about Srila Prabhupada a lot is being alone in New York City before he had anyone, any followers at all. When he was living in that studio Upper West Side of New York, I guess it was. And he had nothing. He was living in an office. There wasn't anything there, just a bare floor, and he had a trunk that was his desk. And probably most of the time, probably was just there alone by him. You know, he was starting, he met some people, and some people started to come, and he was giving some classes. But most of the time, he was just there all by himself, working on his Bhagavad Gita, finishing it up. And one of the things that Srila Prabhupada did there, of course, I tend to think that Prabhupada was there alone, but that's because my consciousness. If I were there, I'd feel like I was alone. But of course, Prabhupada was there with Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, all the Guru Parampara was there supporting him in what he was doing. So you know how he had nothing really. I just imagine, I always think of this, when he went from Butler, Pennsylvania to New York, I guess he had some contact with Dr. Mishra, that he was going to help him out somewhat. But it really wasn't a very stable situation that he was entering into. And going there in the winter, I'm freezing here in Florida. Prabhupada was going to New York City in the winter. I always think, you know, we hear about Prabhupada, he had those rubber shoes. I say, he couldn't have gone through the winter with just those rubber shoes. I mean, is it? Then I think, well, what was he wearing? These big, you know, boots that people wear. But I don't think you can walk in the snow in New York in just those rubber shoes. He must have gotten something from somebody. It's just, of course, probably a Mahayogi, so maybe he did walk through the snow in those rubber shoes. But it's hard to imagine. They would freeze, actually, literally. They would freeze and probably crack and fall apart. It must have come out. But then, anyway, it's I was just thinking how probably he didn't have anything. Actually, for years, probably didn't have anything. Even when he was living in India, he didn't have anything. He probably was so meticulous in keeping track of every single paisa that he spent. He would write down, keep track of it. So he was always very careful in using Krishna's energy. But he went for so long without having anything. One of the things that Prabhupada did when he was living alone there in New York, in that office building, was he recorded the introduction to Gita Upanishad. He had completed. You know, actually earlier, you read about this in Lilamrita, Prabhupada did a whole, he did his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, something like 1,000 pages, and then it was stolen. I think, doesn't it say in Lilamrita, he suspected that maybe one of his servants sold it to get money or something. I mean, just imagine, you do a whole, it's not like you have it on a backup on a drive somewhere. He did the whole thing. It must have taken, who knows how long. It took a really long time to write a commentary. He's studying the commentary of Baladeva Vidyabhushan especially. Of course, he dedicates his Bhagavad Gita to him. And then, you know, what Prabhupada had to do, he was thinking, of course, he had never been to America, but he was thinking of the Western mentality. He's preaching outside of India. He's taking the message of Lord Krishna outside of India. So how is he going to say it for these? What is he going to say to these people? People he doesn't know, at least on the external platform, as we know people. But he's going to have to communicate Bhagavad Gita, something so foreign and so much terminology. It's such a challenge. You know, generally, the commentarial tradition in the parampara is written. The commentaries are written in Sanskrit. You're reading Sanskrit and you're writing the commentary in Sanskrit. So when you're reading Sanskrit and then you have to translate the translation of the verses first of all into English, then you have to comment on what you're presenting there in a completely foreign language that doesn't have words for half of the things you're trying to express. You have to come up with them. So imagine what a challenge it is to come up with that language. So Prabhupada, of course, he was always meditating. We know in his arrival prayer, you know, Krishna, you have to empower me, otherwise how can I, will these people be able to accept what I'm trying to say? If you don't empower me, then I won't be successful. You know, one just a little aside about this Prabhupada's arrival prayer, Krishna Tabha Punya Habi Bhai. It was originally not translated exactly right from the Bengali. What it actually says is that Prabhupada is actually telling Krishna that if you empower me to do this, you'll get the blessings of Srimati Radharani. That's actually what the first verse of that song says. So, pretty tactful on Srila Prabhupada's part. You want to get Radharani's mercy, then empower me so I can preach to these mlechas here in this place. So Prabhupada was always meditating on this. So in any case, he did this whole Bhagavad Gita, so then he had to do it all over again. Then when he was in New York, then he got a tape recorder. You remember, he had a tape recorder, then that was stolen. He didn't have anything, just a man, or his typewriter was stolen, and that's where his typewriter was stolen. That's the other thing, he was typing, you know, manual typewriter. That's how he was writing his books. He couldn't go back and, you know, it's pretty hard to polish things when you're just working on a manual typewriter. Anyway, so that was stolen. Then he got a tape recorder, so I remember, I think that was the sequence. He got a tape recorder. So then he recorded that introduction to Gita Upanishad. I think that's still available, if I remember correctly. Yeah. The audio of that. It is, right? Yeah. So there's Prabhupada sitting alone there in that room, and he's dictating this introduction to Gita Upanishad. So this, of course, is some edited version of it we have in our books. I was just thinking just to read something from this, meditate somewhat on Srila Prabhupada there in that situation, what he's trying to do. Basically, he's giving a pretty much an overview of the Bhagavad Gita, and he's trying to establish in the mind of the reader a proper way to approach Bhagavad Gita, how you should receive it. So let me just start reading here. This is a couple of pages into it here. Prabhupada says, actually this is, I'll just start right from after he does his introductory Mangala Acharana. Then he says, Bhagavad Gita is also known as Gita Upanishad. It is the essence of Vedic knowledge and one of the most important Upanishads in Vedic literature. Now, one thing I always think when, just like now we're putting these, you know, Bhagavad Gitas in hotel rooms all over the motels all over the country and different places. And I think, what does somebody think when they read this? They definitely have to be somewhat dedicated to want to understand it, because still there's a lot of foreign things here. So even this very sentence, it's one of the most important Upanishads, where probably most people reading this don't know what an Upanishad is, don't know what Vedic literature is, they don't know anything. So Prabhupada has to explain so many things on the way here. And even people from the, you know, in the Indian tradition, Hindu tradition, they may have only a vague idea of what these different aspects of the Vedic literature are. Because there's so many books, it's very broad. And how it all fits together. Generally the conception, even by Western scholars, is it's just this kind of a scattered thing. There's something over here and something over here. There's no cohesion to it. It doesn't have any central message. Because this sage, he wrote this, and this other sage, he wrote this over here. But our disciplic succession, coming from Lord Chaitanya, we're very definite on the point. There is something specific, and there's a specific point. And of course, we have the third verse of the Bhagavatam, Nigama Kalpataro Galitam Palam Shukamukad Amrita Darva Sabyutam. That it's, there's a tree, the Vedic literature is like a tree, and what is the purpose of the tree, ultimately a fruit tree, is to produce the fruit. So this is the fruit of the Vedic literature. The Srimad Bhagavatam is the fruit of the Vedic literature. So what the Krishna consciousness movement is, of course, we're presenting that fruit. That's our central philosophy. Our philosophy is contained there in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So Prabhupada, of course, here, this is the introduction to Bhagavad Gita. But the same point is somewhat, Prabhupada is making the same point here, that the essential teachings of the Upanishads, which are the philosophical section of the Vedas, they're contained within the Bhagavad Gita. So therefore it's called Gita Upanishad. And of course it's also called Gita Upanishad because it's spoken directly by Krishna. The Upanishads, even though they appear to be coming from different sages, they're actually eternal. You know, just like we have the Shrutigan, the personified Vedas, we say. So the Upanishads, there's a personality connected with each one of these. And these persons are eternal. Just as Krishna's eternal, these personalities are eternal, the Upanishads are eternal, this knowledge is eternal. All of these things exist they coexist eternally with Krishna. So even though it seems that some sage has spoken this, he's actually just tapping into this font of eternal knowledge that exists along with Krishna. So here Prabhupada, just to continue a little something from Prabhupada. Of course, there are many commentaries in English on the Bhagavad Gita, and one may question the necessity for another one. This present edition can be explained in the following way. Recently, an American lady asked me to recommend an English translation of Bhagavad Gita. Of course, in America, there are so many editions of Bhagavad Gita available in English, but as far as I have seen, not only in America, but also in India, none of them could be strictly said to be authoritative, because in almost every one of them, the commentator has expressed his own opinions without touching the spirit of Bhagavad Gita as it is. So this is why Prabhupada felt the need to present another Bhagavad Gita, even though there are hundreds of them, hundreds of translations of the Bhagavad Gita. Just imagine so many, you know, for a devotee of Krishna, who wants to, who's, of course, has prema, love for Krishna, and wants Krishna's message to be heard. So every time you see another Bhagavad Gita, you say, oh no, not again. This person again is twisting Krishna's message. It's actually, it strikes the heart. You know, Prabhupada, he had his transcendental anger over this. He said, they're trying to kill Krishna. Those were the words that he used. They're trying to present Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's Bhagavad Gita, without Krishna. They're trying to take Krishna out of Bhagavad Gita, trying to kill Krishna. So this is, you know, how we can, you can use all different qualities in the service of Krishna. So this is an example of using anger. Anger at those who are twisting Krishna's words. It's very offensive. So for a devotee, that it hurts. It hurts his heart. So that's why Prabhupada felt, I have to do it. It's not being done, so I have to do it. Then Prabhupada continues, the spirit of Bhagavad Gita. So he says, no one has given the spirit, has presented the actual spirit of Bhagavad Gita. So he says, the spirit of Bhagavad Gita is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita itself. It is just like this. If we want to take a particular medicine, then we have to follow the directions written on the label. We cannot take the medicine according to our own whim or the direction of a friend. It must be taken according to the directions on the label or the directions given by a physician. Similarly, Bhagavad Gita should be taken or accepted as it is directed by the speaker himself. The speaker of Bhagavad Gita is Lord Sri Krishna. He is mentioned on every page of Bhagavad Gita as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. You hear the urgency in Prabhupada's voice. He's basically, you can see, he's saying, see, it makes so much sense. Isn't it sensible what I'm saying here? Krishna spoke this. He's telling you to listen to it in a certain way. He's authority, so listen to what he has to say. Take it his way, not your way. Then he says, of course, the word Bhagavan sometimes refers to any powerful person or any powerful demigod. And certainly here, Bhagavan designates Lord Sri Krishna as a great personality. But at the same time, we should know that Lord Sri Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, as is confirmed by all the acharyas, spiritual masters, like Shankara Acharya, Ramanuja Acharya, Madhva Acharya, Nimbarka Swami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and many other authorities of Vedic knowledge in India. So again, for a Western person, this doesn't mean anything. These names, they've never heard of before. But it is explained here that they're great spiritual masters. And they've all taken Krishna as Bhagavan, not just some handsome boy that some people worship for some strange reason. He's Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada used the term here, yes. Of course, that's another thing people are encountering for the first time, Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Lord Himself also establishes Himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the Bhagavad Gita. So not only do these acharyas say He's God, but He says that He's God. And He is accepted as such in the Brahma Samhita and all the Puranas, especially the Srimad Bhagavatam, known as the Bhagavat Purana, Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. Therefore, we should take Bhagavad Gita as it is directed by the personality of Godhead himself. Now, Srila Prabhupada made the point that if you have any, if you want to accept, read Bhagavad Gita, then you have to accept what Krishna says. So if Krishna is saying that he's God, then you have to accept it. Otherwise, why are you reading his book? Because he's a crazy person. If he's saying that he's God, but he's not, you don't believe he is, then why would you listen to him? Obviously, he's just insane. So you have to give him the benefit of the doubt. Huh? Basically, at least, I think Prabhupada does say that somewhere here, basically, not, maybe not exactly these words, but theoretically accept. All right, I'm going to enter into this without prejudging. Let me see what he has to say. Let me see all that he has to say here. And let me see if it makes sense what he's saying about himself. And of course, when you listen to what Krishna is presenting, you think, you realize, well, this is not a crazy person, obviously. How could someone who's presenting such wonderful teachings, explaining so much in so few words, be a crazy person? Obviously, he's not a very competent person. And he's making this extraordinary claim about himself. So maybe I should give it some real consideration. So then Prabhupada, he says, therefore we should take Bhagavad Gita as it is directed by the personality of Godhead himself. In the fourth canto of the Gita, the Lord says, so then he quotes these verses about the Guru Parampara, which I'll skip, that you have to have a spiritual master. He says, here the Lord informs Arjuna that this system of yoga, the Bhagavad Gita, was first spoken to the sun god, and the sun god explained it to Manu, and Manu explained it to Ikshvaku, and in that way, by the cyclic succession, one person after another, this yoga system has been coming down. But in the course of time, it has become lost. Consequently, the Lord has to speak it again, this time to Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Now, of course, this is another point. Again, this is eternal knowledge, and Krishna is presenting it again, because it became lost over the course of time. But this is how it's carried down from one's great authority, great spiritual authority to another, without changing it. Of course, that's also, we use that in the analogy of the fruit of the tree. So the best fruit is on the top of the tree. Actually, just a little aside, I came across this recently, watching some devotees' memoirs of Prabhupada. I think it may have been Govinda Dasi. When Prabhupada was in Hawaii, he was there. First, she invited him there to come. She said, it'll be full of mangoes. And when Prabhupada went there, it wasn't mango season. So he wrote a letter, said, Govinda Dasi has cheated me. But another time he went there, and the mangoes, it was mango season. So some devotee asked him, Prabhupada, what kind of mango do you want? Because there are all these different kinds of mangoes. So Prabhupada said, you get the one from the eastern side of the tree. That's what he said. He didn't say this, you know, brand or whatever. This, he said, you get the one from the eastern side of the tree because it gets the early morning sun, so it gets the best energy there. So the best fruit is on the top of the tree, especially on the eastern side. So that's what's coming down. The ripe fruit of the Vedic literature is Srimad Bhagavatam, then of course it's handed down very carefully through the Guru Parampara. Let's see. Krishna tells Arjuna that he, Krishna, is relating the supreme science to him because Arjuna is his devotee and his friend. The purport of this is that Bhagavad Gita is a treatise which is especially meant for the devotee of the Lord. This reminds me of Jiva Goswami in his Tattva Sandarbha. Of course, Jiva Goswami is going to present the whole philosophy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Tattva Sandarbha is where he establishes his pramana, which means what he's going to use as his evidence for explaining the purport of the Vedas. So his conclusion is Srimad Bhagavatam is the best. And one of the first things he says early in the Tattva Sandarbha, his first book, is that I'm writing this for devotees. If you just want to criticize and find fault and you know, basically, if you're not a devotee, then this book is not for you. Go read something else. So that's what Lord Chaitanya is writing to. Jiva Goswami is writing to fortify the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with shastric evidence to support. I've studied somewhat, Jiva Goswami's Sandarbhas, and what you find there, it's quite interesting actually, because he gives these elaborate arguments to make his points, quoting all kinds of scripture, especially by he starts with the Bhagavatam verse to make a point, and then he gives so many supportive arguments, and very intricate sometimes, especially when he's dealing with impersonalism, and he spells out what this aspect of their impersonal philosophy is, and so on. He quotes this verse and that verse. But what you find is that we already accept the conclusion that he's coming to. We already know what it is. We already know where the Mayavadis are wrong, more or less. We don't know all the intricacies of it. But we tend to know the bottom line already. We don't know how to get there, like Jiva Goswami does, how he counters every single objection and counter-argument possible, just one after the other. There's a kind of logic it's called the logic of pounding in a stake, if you want, or a post. If you want to tie an animal, a horse or a cow, to a post, and you beat it and beat it and beat it so it's solidly in the ground. So that's what Jiva Goswami does to make his points. Oh, you think you have another objection? Well, take this. Boom, boom, another hit. but still, whatever he's presenting, ultimately, you say, gee, I don't think I can remember all these counter-arguments, but I understand the point that he's making. Because Prabhupada has already taught us these points. He's already taught us all these arguments, not all the necessary, the intricacies of the arguments, but at least the bottom line. He's taught us, and we accept these things. Even something as simple as, that how Krishna is completely transcendental. There's nothing material about him. So he gives so many arguments just to explain something like that, quoting so many shastras. So all of us, if I ask you, well, is Krishna only material, only spiritual? Well, of course you're going to say yes. But you may not know that they actually have some counter-arguments, because they'll quote this Upanishad or this or that, and try to come up with their arguments. So anyway, Prabhupada say, this is the purport. Here he's talking about the purport of the Bhagavad Gita, that you have to hear from a devotee, or you have to be a devotee. My point, I was talking about how Jiva Goswami says, you have to be a devotee, and you can get your philosophical arguments strengthened by studying Jiva Goswami. So let me just read a little bit more here, and then I'll stop at the end of this paragraph. So he says, so I'll read this sentence again. The purport of this is that Bhagavad Gita is a treatise which is especially meant for the devotee of the Lord. There are three classes of transcendentalists, namely the jnani, the yogi, and the bhakta, or the impersonalist, the meditator, and the devotee. Here the Lord clearly tells Arjuna that he is making him the first receiver of the new Bhagavad Gita, of a new Bhagavad Gita, he calls it. Or the statements of Arjuna. Wait a minute, did I skip something? Oh, I'm sorry, I misread. Making him the first receiver of a new parampara, that makes sense, disciplic succession, because the old succession was broken. It was the Lord's wish, therefore, to establish another parampara in the same line of thought that was coming down from the Sun God to others. And it was his wish that his teaching be distributed anew by Arjuna. He wanted Arjuna to become the authority in understanding the Bhagavad Gita. So we see that Bhagavad Gita is instructed to Arjuna especially because Arjuna was a devotee of the Lord, a strict student of Krishna, and his intimate friend. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita is best understood by a person who has qualities similar to Arjuna. That is to say, he must be a devotee in a direct relationship with the Lord. So here, this is in some way, I'm thinking this is echoing Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami saying, you're not going to understand this, really. You won't be able to appreciate my books unless you're a devotee. So here Prabhupada is essentially saying, you have to become like Arjuna. Krishna is revealing this knowledge to Arjuna because Arjuna is his devotee and his friend. And of course, what's implied here is this is not such a simple thing to understand. It's not just, simple arithmetic, 1 plus 1 equals 2. But there are, of course, many subtleties. Bhagavad Gita is in some ways, it's a difficult book. It covers a lot of topics in a very short time. And of course, especially for the Western reader, a lot of this is so, the whole context is so foreign. We're hearing about Varnashram. A lot of what's spoken in Bhagavad Gita is in the context of the Varnashram system, which we have no experience with. And all, you know, Vedic sacrifice, what is this Vedic sacrifice all about? All of these different concepts. Of course, Arjuna's, he's living in that civilization, Vedic civilization, so he's familiar with these things. But still, there are a lot of different philosophies. There have always been a lot of different philosophies. Been hearing lately in our Bhagavatam classes, or at least in the last few months, how it, when Sukadeva Goswami was speaking to Maharaj Pariksit, often Maharaj Pariksit was asking questions of Sukadeva Goswami that implied that there, he's telling Sukadeva Goswami, well, I think you have to answer this question because, hint, hint, there are people in the audience who may not just accept this on your word. It's not in the audience are not just devotees. You have karmis and yogis and impersonalists and so on in this audience because sages gathered from everywhere when Sukadeva was speaking to Maharaj Pariksit. So they had a lot of different philosophies. So Sukadeva Goswami had to answer his questions very carefully. Sometimes Pariksit Maharaj was helping to elicit the explanations of the philosophy. So the point there is that in the audience, for those in the audience who really wanted to understand, they had to understand that devotion has to come out. I have to have some devotion to the speaker, first of all, and then who the speaker is talking about. Of course, Sukadeva Goswami, because he's totally in love with Krishna, that comes out. So anyone who's here in that audience, he's going to experience a change of heart. That's the very second verse of the Bhagavatam says, if you have eagerness to hear Bhagavatam, then it will transform your heart. You'll become a lover of God by studying Srimad Bhagavatam. Just that eagerness itself, or you can say that's actually what's necessary, the eagerness to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, that causes a transformation within the heart. Why is that? That's because Krishna is there, and he sees, oh, this person is eager to hear about me. Let me wash away all the contamination and awaken the prema, the love for me within the heart. Anyway, so this is just a few words on the introduction. The introduction is quite elaborate. Prabhupada covers a lot of topics. And of course, the amazing thing about Prabhupada is that these things are spoken so spontaneously. They're just gushing from his heart, from the heart of a pure devotee. So he's eager. You can see his eagerness. Krishna has a message. I've come here to help him spread his message. So I'm going to get right into it. This is how you, for all of you who are listening to this message, please approach it in this spirit if you want to get the real benefit of it. All right, I'll stop here. Anyone like to add anything? Nityasena Prabhu.
Maharaj's been reading the Krishna book lately after studying Sandarbhas and all of these other books. And she said, wow, I just appreciated Prabhupada's writing so much more after reading all the other things and hearing all of these other commentaries on the 10th canto. And now I see how he's put so much in just a few words.
Yeah.
And after reading all of the other books, you get a lot deeper appreciation for what he's talking about.
Yeah, that's nice. That's a nice realization. It's really condensed down. Prabhupada's taken the essence and presented it so wonderfully in such beautiful language for our benefit. Yeah. All right, let's stop here. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jaya.